Back together, you and I, Connecticut Today for Tuesday, May 4th. A return visit from one of our go-to guys, Mark Fitch, from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. He, the writer of the Fitch Files. We talked about some current issues facing lawmakers at the Capitol. Pete Hutchison joined us in the 4 o'clock hour. Pete, the head of the Landmark Legal Foundation. Pete talked about an end around that one major Democratic Senate member is trying to do to influence the Supreme Court. I'd like to speak to him once every month or so, Mark Fitch from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy in the state. He writes the Fitch Files column and does a lot of digging on behalf of the Yes, a conservative think tank in Connecticut. Who would know that? Mark, it's Paul again, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. It's good to be back on with you.
Well, thank you, sir. I guess the General Assembly churning along here. And I guess, Mark, there's kind of a renewed effort now. You know, we had the effort that pretty much scuttled, no matter what form they came out in, tolls, which really surprised the heck out of me. But they did a good job, Patrick Sasser and all those people. So now, Mark, I guess there's going to be an effort aimed here, because it does have to go through the General Assembly, this admitted gasoline tax hike to fund this transportation climate initiative.
Yes. So basically what the Transportation and Climate Initiative is it would force gasoline wholesalers and distributors to purchase emission credits at auction, forcing them to kind of compete, and then they'd be able to sell their gasoline and diesel and home heating oil here in Connecticut. The problem is that those auctions will naturally raise the price of gasoline at the pump and, you know, home heating fuel, diesel fuel, all those different things. And, you know, naturally that becomes a cost on drivers, mm-hmm. homeowners, I mean, everybody really. So that's really the crux of the issue. The TCI revenue, it's estimated to be about $100 million a year over the next 10 years. So you're talking about $1 billion. And on top of that, they also, you know, Governor Lamont has also put forward his highway use tax on large trucks, which would also bring in about another $100 million a year. And a lot of the opponents see this as just kind of a tolls workaround. You know, Governor Lamont tried to toll trucks, couldn't get that done. So mm-hmm. here's kind of the next best thing.
It's interesting, Mark, that you have the governor kind of banging heads with the far left of his party on things like a higher income tax for higher earners here in the state, or a higher capital gains tax. You know, he's kind of drawn the line at that, saying no, 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 infuriating them, because that's where he's from. He's a, you know, rich white guy from Lower Fairfield County, but he is following or maybe towing the party line on things, for example, like the TCI, which is under this big broad banner of something to fight climate change.
Yes, the governor has been very active when it comes to green issues, environmental issues. I mean, he and his wife are very good friends with Katie Dykes, who's the commissioner of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. He's been pushing forward the wind project down in New London, and obviously with this transportation and climate initiative, which, you know, Connecticut is one of only three states that signed on to this. Yeah. It was originally supposed to be 12 states in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of going it alone, you know, the three, you know, almost smallest states in the country, you know, trying to do this. And, you know, what you were saying before with the taxes and everything like that, yes, that's left him butting heads with some of his more progressive party members, but it wasn't just him. I mean, Governor Malloy gave up on raising taxes towards the end of his administration as well, because he saw that it hadn't worked, and all it was doing is making things worse, and we ended up with larger budget deficits. So I think Governor Lamont, when it comes to tax policy, is playing it safe, but, you know, things like TCI and the highway use tax, that all trickles down to, you know, the middle class, the working class, the mm-hmm. people who are going to be affected by that extra cost in gasoline, that extra cost in home heating fuel, that extra cost in groceries, because that's how we get these things to our grocery stores. And so when the Republicans held a press conference last week, announcing their partnership with No Tolls Connecticut to hold rallies to stop this plan. You know, they also had with them, you know, the director of the head of the Connecticut Food Association, saying that yes, this is going to affect your grocery costs as well.
Mark, hang on. Mark Fitch with us from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. He writes the Fitch Files column. Mark, hang on. More with Mark straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together on WICC. And he writes the Fitch Files column feature at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Check it out online, yankeeinstitute.org. Mark Fitch joins us. We like to have Mark on for once a month or so to see what he's got under his magnifying glass and one of the issues here that Mark gave me the heads up on approval. And again, Mark, you know, we all love UConn. Go Huskies. Go the Husky men and women. And, you know, we all have friends and relatives who went to UConn. A dear friend of mine is a broadcasting instructor there. But I see you sent me this. Finance Committee approves $46 million in bonding. So we're borrowing again so UConn can hire researchers. And then this comes as UConn health officials, Mark, are asking the General Assembly, in addition to that bonding, to do what?
Oh, they also are asking the state of Connecticut to pick up the tab for the unfunded portion of their pension payments. So, they're not the ones, and to be sure, they're not the ones that underfunded the pensions, but they do have to. The way it works is that when you pay your employees, you have your fringe benefits on top of it, and the unfunded pension costs are factored into that fringe benefit rate. So at UConn, when you add in all the different fringe benefits when it comes to both state and federal, you end up paying 102% of payroll. So that's like paying two people for one. Yeah. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work when you're trying to get researchers and research grants here, and it's costing them researchers and research grants. I mean, they listed, I believe it was 9 researchers who left UConn taking their grant money with them to go to other universities, you know, Florida, Georgia, Yale, where they can get more bang for their buck, because the hiring costs and the employee costs at UConn and UConn Health are just outrageous because of this unfunded pension cost. So the UConn officials are asking the state of Connecticut to pick up about $100 million worth of unfunded pension payments so they can remain competitive with these other institutions.
And you know, Mark, I don't want to cast aspersions on the average Joe or Mary taxpayer in this state, but you know, Mark, to somebody who's not into the minutia like you and I are on this and really consume this stuff, you know, the average Joe and Mary six pack or lunch pack is sitting there going, yeah, okay, we got to pay this so UConn can do research in a research, you know, university. I would imagine that all this, Mark, maybe on the average taxpayer is like, what this is all this money for? Like, yeah, okay, my nephew or my niece went to UConn or my grandson does, and that's good. Where are all these ancillary costs going, like you just, you know, laid out for us here? I don't know if this whole thing about being a leading research university, dun-dun-dun, you know, it really connects with people sometimes. Maybe I'm just wrong.
No, I mean, having you know, groundbreaking research, having that intellectual infrastructure, it can lead to business startups, business growth, and that's the big pitch the UConn is making for this bond package, is that, hey, you know, since 2003 we've fostered 51 new startup companies and 132 companies since, you know, or 51 new startups and 132 companies since 2003 is what the UConn's president is saying. And we also have to remember that, you know, these research grants and everything that can lead to kind of big, you know, industry making, you know, discoveries at the same time. And, you know, I'll give it to some of the senators on that commission or that committee. You know, they pointed out, well, UConn has a big endowment. I think it's about $746 million.
Yeah.
Or why can't they, why can't they fund this themselves? And then at the same time, they recently announced they want to build a new hockey stadium.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At some point, you have to kind of put your money where your mouth is if you want to be this, groundbreaking, nationally recognized research institution. You're going to have to put the money into funding that research. And do we really have to borrow $46 million to pay the salaries of researchers when they're also trying to, build a hockey stadium and all these other things? It kind of gets into what are the real priorities for you?
That's what I meant. Yeah. To the average person, the average taxpayer, like you've got money, use it.
I know people love college sports and everything like that, but higher education institutions, they're there for it to be higher education institutions, not sports companies. So I think they'd be better served putting their money into, researchers and, trying to find new technologies and things like that. And that's my personal opinion, but they do have to at some point, figure out what it is they're trying to be. Because right now they're trying to be something, they're trying to be both, they're trying to be this great research institute and maybe and a major, sports institute. And they probably don't have the size or the ability to be both at the same time.
Yeah. Finally, Mark, as we wrap up here, what are you hearing, if anything, on legal marijuana? I mean, I'm talking to some legislators on both sides of the aisle, Mark, saying that, it in their minds, it's only about 50-50 now. And again, the hang up here is how much revenue, goes to these, targeted areas for this whole quote unquote equity thing. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the Democrats have made legalized marijuana one of their top issues for the past few years. And they've had, large majorities in the General Assembly for those past few years. So this really comes down to it's kind of a bipartisan thing in the fact that some Republicans support it and some Republicans don't, and some Democrats support it and some Democrats don't. But the Democrats haven't been able to get enough of their own people together to actually pass it.
Yeah.
And yes, it's coming down to this big equity debate. And in some ways, they run the risk of, equiting themselves right into, failure.
Yeah.
Because if it ends up, not happening, well, then there's no equity for anybody. And you end up with the same, same laws on the books and the same issues facing those same communities. So, it seemed like it was going to be a slam dunk at the beginning of the year. And now I'm starting to wonder. That's the most insight I have into it. It's funny that you happen to mention it, because we just published an article about the legislature attempting to ban flavored vaping products.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time,
they said, well, forget about banning menthol cigarettes, because that would have cost us $108 million in revenue, right?
Well, yeah. And at the same time, they want to legalize marijuana that comes in flavored vapes and gummies and brownies, and we all know these things. But so I think, it's an issue of letting the perfect be the enemy of the good when it comes to the marijuana legalization. And I think that's an issue that the Democrats are running into amongst their own party.
Mark Fitch, thank you. He writes the Fitch Files column, YankeeInstitute.org. Check it out. Mark, thanks. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul.
All right, Mark Fitch there. Check his stuff out. As we welcome back a gentleman we've had on the show before from the Landmark Legal Foundation to talk about Congress and the Supreme Court. Now, you may have seen or read, the idea of packing the court, not really going to happen. Joe Manchin of West Virginia saying he's not going to do it. But there may be something else afoot here. Landmark Legal Foundation President Pete Hutchison joins us once again for a return visit. Pete, Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on again.
Pete, great to have you on. And I got this release from your people, and this centers around, Pete, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. What is he pushing here? What is he trying to do? And it has to do, Pete, with a phrase that maybe people have heard about, amicus briefs filed in certain cases. Talk about what's going on here.
Well, you know, this is part of Sheldon Whitehouse and the other leftists, really, on the Senate Judiciary Committee and the progressive left generally, to do three or four things. The first one is they want to undermine public confidence in the judicial branch. And they want to intimidate the judiciary and the judges, especially Chief Justice Roberts and the Supreme Court. They want to squelch speech, and they want to intimidate conservatives who support organizations like Landmark Legal Foundation. And the latest ploy here is for years, White House has been complaining about organizations like Landmark Legal Foundation and others that file amicus briefs in the Supreme Court primarily. An amicus brief is what the English words for it is friend of the court brief. So we're not parties to a case, but we're interested in the issues involved in a case. And this is always the situation in Supreme Court cases that deal with constitutional issues. There are liberal groups that file amicus briefs. There are conservative groups. But White House has concocted this conspiracy that groups like Landmark and several others of us have worked for decades with these dark money groups to take over the Supreme Court. And we gave you Justices Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Roberts, and Amy Coney Barrett. And I'm leaving somebody out. But anyway, we were all in on it. And if it weren't so frightening, the amount of power these people have, it would be embarrassingly comical.
Pete, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to continue with this. Pete Hutchison is the guest, head of the Landmark Legal Foundation, and we'll find out exactly what this bill, that hopefully doesn't have a shot of passing here, we hope, what this bill would mandate and why it's being suggested. Pete, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Traffic and weather together on WICC. And we are once again with Pete Hutchison, head of the Landmark Legal Foundation, conservative law foundation. Check them out online. And Pete, this bill that's being proposed here by Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, so he would force, if he had his druthers here and others who agree with this, he wants to find out who the financial donors here are behind, right, behind groups who file amicus briefs?
That's right. So there are real rules in federal courts and in the Supreme Court. They have two separate sets of rules, but they both have a rule that requires that if an amicus brief is filed with the financial support of one of the parties, we have to disclose that. Well, we never do that. But what Whitehouse wants to do is he wants to require us, Landmark and others, to disclose who our donors are when we file briefs in more than three cases a year. Well, the purpose behind that is obviously to scare off our donors who don't want to be, you know, they're not in the public eye. They don't want to be in the public eye, but they want to help, and they believe they're behind the principles that we promote. So, you know, if you give money to the ACLU, which files amicus briefs all the time, you know, they'll throw a ticker tape parade and have a weepy congratulatory, service for you. But if you give money to somebody like Landmark Legal Foundation, they'll put your name on the internet and they'll have a bunch of protesters in your front yard or banging on your front door. People don't want that. White House knows it. He is stirring the pot to scare people off and thereby squelch free speech, their association, their free speech rights, and they want to dry up the money for the competing ideas, which, by the way, are the winning ideas in the public. They're the winning ideas in courts. They can't win on principle or on the law, and so they try to bully their way to victory. And you know, this guy has been doing this for years, and I will tell you this. I have seen one amicus brief that in my memory of 30 years doing this, one brief that was out of line. And the author of that brief was a United States senator named Sheldon Whitehouse.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And I believe somebody named Blumenthal signed off on this.
Oh, there. And Pete, if it was Dick Blumenthal, I'm sure he was shocked and outraged about something, right?
Yes, he was. He was. And but anyway, this brief is the one, and it was in a gun case, and they talked about, Whitehouse wrote about how the Supreme Court is broken, and if they don't fix it, then Congress will. Well, that's a threat. That's just a flat-out threat from the legislative branch to a separate, co-equal branch of government, the judiciary. And I have had it with this guy. You know, you live in the most beautiful part of this country. I didn't realize it till I drove through it last summer.
Yeah.
Why do you give us these crazy idiots in the Senate? Take them back.
Pete, I've spent 30 years trying to figure that out. You know, Pete, I understand the prohibition against parties doing this, but frankly, if there's a good amicus brief from the right or the left, I don't care who's donating to those organizations. A good legal argument is a good legal argument. I don't care either way.
They're important because, you know, a lot of times you have a case that's an important case, but the litigants, you know, they're not the greatest lawyers in the world, and I certainly am not the greatest lawyer in the world. But it's helpful. And judges at all levels will tell you this, that sometimes if you have a group that has a particular interest or a particular expertise, and they come to the court and they say, you know, here's what the founders or the framers meant when they were talking about this issue. And here's why they did it. And here's why they constructed it this way. And here's what you ought to do. Well, the parties may have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. They just want to win the case, to their credit. That's what they're supposed to do. But that helps courts. And I've read some beautiful briefs that I thought were full of garbage on principle, but wow, they were convincing. So, you know, I say the more the merrier. And but this business of claiming that it's corrupt and it's a corrupt court on the right and it's, you know, the Trump judges are corrupt, blah, 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 blah. It's a load of garbage. Don't buy it. Do not buy it.
But so, Pete, this obviously, I mean, this has no shot, right? There's no Republican support for this. And I would assume there might not be a lot of Democratic support either.
No, but importantly, Whitehouse is sort of thrown in the towel on the legislature, but he wrote a letter to the Supreme Court, the rulemaker there, I forget what the term is, sergeant at arms or whatever, but saying you guys should rewrite your rule and make this a rule that parties or that amicus have to disclose that. Well, they wrote back and said, thank you, but no. And maybe you want to bring it up with the judicial conference, which deals with all the other federal courts. So that's what this latest deal is he's written a letter there saying, okay, now you guys need to impose this rule. And, you know, who knows if he'll get traction there. But it's, you know, this infringes First Amendment rights, and it won't succeed in the courts. But then, of course, what you'll have is the claim of corruption by the, you know, the Federalist Society and evil Trump judges. You know, this just shows how corrupt they are. So, it's phony, but it's scary, and it is not to be ignored.
Pete, thank you. We appreciate it. Now, as to why such a beautiful area, as you say, of the country and of New England, why we send the people to Washington we do, I don't know. And sorry to tell you, Pete, but I don't think you're going to be seeing anybody in Congress from Connecticut with an R next to his or her name anytime soon. I'll try, Pete, but I can't do that much.
Well, I won't hold my breath. But I might send you flowers if you get that deal done.
All right. Pete Hutchison, head of the Landmark Legal Foundation. Check him out, landmarklegal.org. Pete, thank you. Always good to hear from you. We'll have you back. Thanks.
Okay, that was fun. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Good guy there. Pete. And now you may hate the Landmark Legal Foundation if you're a liberal, but like he said, who's White House? What is this? Yeah, organizations have to disclose their donors. No, that shouldn't happen on the right or the left, even if it's a left-leaning organization. The ones who write one of these amicus briefs on the Supreme Court, it's none of anybody's business who gives them money.